I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources. Inside Sources. Utah's source for exclusive access and insights behind the news. Here's the opinion page editor of the Deseret News, Boyd Matheson, on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome, everyone, to Inside Sources here on KSL News Radio. It is great to be with you today. I am Boyd Matheson, opinion editor at the Deseret News. And as always, we've got lots of ground to cover. We're going to try to continue to divide the rage from the reason and elevate the conversation. And our next guest is someone who does that on a regular basis. I was mentioning before the break that often our next guest and I are somewhat pitted against each other. At least I think the producers think we're pitted against each other as we go on different TV outlets. And Dr. Basil Smichel joins us. He is a lecturer at Columbia School of International and Public Affairs and a political analyst, was the executive director of the New York Democratic Party, and a host of other things. And Basil, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad to be here with you.
It's great. You know, I think you and I have appeared together on everything from MSNBC to Fox News and just about everything in between. And the thing that I always love and appreciate is that you always push things to principle, and you get to the heart of the issue as opposed to the heat of the politics of it all. And want to start our conversation today with Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not the politics of it, but your memories of her. What do you think her legacy is?
Well, I tell you, I remember when she was nominated, and, you know, she's a Cornell grad, I'm a Cornell grad, so I just remember having that connection to her, and, you know, the sort of sense of pride that I felt, again, because of that connection, because she's from New York City like I am, she's from Brooklyn. Although I'm from the Bronx, we have a little rivalry there, but that's all right. You know, Yankees, Dodgers, so, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I reflect on something that has been talked about a bit, but not getting, I think, enough coverage, which is the friendship that she had with Antonin Scalia. You know, and there's some that would wonder why or how someone who was viewed as so liberal could be considered so close to someone who is viewed as so conservative, you know, as their opinions could be so wildly different. And I think, honestly, and I experienced this too with colleagues, with students of mine, you know, there's just an appreciation for the institution, for, you know, a desire to want to get things right. And I mean right meaning, like, you know, to think through the merits of an argument that's presented to you and really and think through a decision and potential outcomes that are true to your best guess of what the framers and the legislators would have intended. And there's something admirable and honorable about that. Even if you come out in different places, I think the search for truth, the attempt at wanting to do it right, can bring people together.
Yeah, and I think we need that more than we've ever needed that. And again, it's one of the things I really appreciate about your approach, and I think what you teach as you have your students together talking about the political process, and I'll get to that in just a moment. I know you also served as an advisor, a strategist for Senator Hillary Clinton when she was the senator from New York. And so you know the ins and outs of Capitol Hill and what happens in all the Senate battles. It seems to me that we're losing a little bit of the Senate being the great deliberative body it's supposed to be. And I think some of these Supreme Court fights are really because the Senate in particular has abdicated its authority and power over to the executive branch.
I mean, that's a good point, and I think these judges, the judicial fights, and I get that conservatives tends to be a more galvanizing issue, judicial appointments. It tends to be more galvanizing for those on the right than they are for the left, even though we tend to be more issue driven. So the issues that come before these judges that drive us, but not the notion of getting judges appointed and elected. And so what I find interesting is that we see the judiciary as a proxy for issues that we don't work out on by ourselves. What I mean by that is, the Senate and the House are supposed to find ways to work out these thorny issues that do have the potential to divide us as a nation, but come together. If you look, I know not everybody reads with earnest the Federalist Papers, but I go back and read them from time to time for my students. And, one of the things that one of the Federalist Papers talked about in determining the separation of powers was making sure that we elected people through whose wisdom you can filter a lot of the issues that may come to the forefront, that may come to their desk, but be able to pull out of it the important pieces of it that could be used to create national policy. And I think we've lost a bit of that, right? So
yeah.
These battles, the judicial fights and others, become proxy for the work that we won't do.
Yeah, that's so true. And I want to get for a minute. You mentioned something. You and I were on. I can't remember what we were on last week. Was it Newsmax or one of those?
Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. It was Bloomberg. That's right. So we were on Bloomberg together last week. And you mentioned something that you are talking to your students about in terms of making sure that the legislative process gets to this iterative component, or really breaking things down into these smaller bills as opposed to these big sweeping bills. Tell me what's happening in your class, what you're teaching, and how are your young students responding to that?
Well, it's tough for younger students because I was this way. I mean, you want change, and you're not fully, you don't understand as much why processes take time and why. So, for example, here's a good example. I think a semester ago, in one of my classes, talking to students about how when Joe Biden made a comment about working with people like a Strom Thurmond or someone else Jesse Helms, people who were segregationists and so on.
Yeah.
And you have young people say, "Well, how could that happen? How could he do that?" So, well, it's 100 people in that chamber. Joe Biden has no control over what South Carolina does in electing their leader, right, or electing their member of the Senate. But you get into a body like that, folks find a way to have to work together to pass legislation. And oftentimes, because of those very divisions, you can't agree to have – it's hard to agree to get these sweeping pieces of legislation. And, of course, if you're younger, you just want change. You're not going to understand that you have to play the politics of this. And I don't mean politics as a big P partisanship, but also even regional politics matters a lot. And so they're not as understanding of that. And look, when I was growing up, when I was young, apartheid was a big issue, and getting institutions to pull out and, divest from apartheid was a big issue. And you could see how, protests and organizing around that actually forced institutions to change. I would say that the Senate and the House are not that quick to move. you can't just move them on the drop of a dime. And it's a difficult thing for students to understand, and even more difficult for how to be patient and affect change over longer periods of time. But I think they've come to understand that it's sort of a necessary evil, if you will, in trying to work with government.
And such an important part of that process. And again, coming back to some real basic things in terms of how we treat people. One of the things that we played this earlier, Justice Ginsburg actually speaking at Justice Scalia's funeral, her eulogy to him. And she talked about how they both disagreed on the interpretation of what was written. But I love this. She said, "We both shared a reverence for the court and its place in our system of government. And I know you're very familiar with the Stoics and many of those principles. What of those do you see in your, or do you try to push into your classroom in terms of, hey, here's some principles and some character traits that would help us talk across our differences and actually get to those solutions you were talking about?
Well, I think it's a great question, because those are skill sets that you have to develop, right? Which are, just ability to listen, number one. And one of the things that I tell people is that when you spend more time trying to prove your point than actually listen to somebody else's, you push people into their silos more deeply and concretely. So the first and foremost, take some moments to not argue your point and actually just listen. The more you listen, you'd be surprised at how much more common ground you would find if you actually work to get people to sort of understand both sides of particular, arguments. And I think that's the biggest issue, the biggest point that I tell my classes, and I tell everyone, at the very beginning, read everything. Watch everything, because your side is not the only side. And if you see it as quickly as you hold and as tightly as you hold on to your principles, somebody's holding on to something else. And you have to understand why that person does what they do. I'll give you a quick example. I was a Cornell graduate. I was speaking to a class a couple of years ago. I got up early. I had 4 hours to kill. So what do you do when you have 4 hours to kill in Ithaca, New York? You get a tattoo. So I'm getting this tattoo. And the guy, the tattoo artist is, this is captive audience here. I can't go anywhere. He can't go anywhere. So we just start talking, and he's asking me what I'm here for. And I don't always tell people what I do for a living.
Yeah.
Because I really want to just hear about them.
Yes.
And he tells me, that he's a libertarian. Always lived upstate New York. He's like, I like the Democrats on some issues. I don't like them on others. And, we had a great conversation. And you'd be surprised if you just allow yourself to have conversations like that, open, honest, without judgment. You'd be surprised at how far you can get. I don't think it works every time, but it will work enough times for us to get past some of this gridlock.
Yeah. Such great insight. So grateful to have Dr. Basil Smeichel with us today. Basil, thank you for carving time out for us. We're going to have you back. I think you have some new fans here on the show. And love your insight.
My pleasure, man.
We'll keep the conversation rolling.
You got it. Take care. Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and step aside again. That was Dr. Basil Smeichel from Columbia. He's a lecturer of international and public affairs and a great man. He and I disagree on a host of things, but we love to push it to principle and have a good conversation. And we're going to continue that. Stay with us here on KSL News Radio.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.